Mientras el profesor Morilla se prepara, solamente presentároslo, aunque son unas palabras que no hace falta mucha presentación para los que sabéis del tema. Digamos, es la referencia, la primera referencia que encontramos en el tratamiento de la avispilla, cuando ya tiene publicaciones desde 1989, junto con, digamos, clases, el arranque del profesor Morilla con el profesor Murakami en el tratamiento de la plaga que desde 1941 afectó a Japón procedente de China. El entomólogo de la Estación de Investigación Agraria de Japón, entomólogo ambiental especializado en los tratamientos de plagas en el medio hortícola, digamos que es la referencia para Europa de cómo afrontar la plaga de la avispilla, desarrollando la tecnología en Japón que luego se ha extendido o que empleamos en el resto de Europa. Agradecerle muy cumplidamente mucho su presencia aquí, el esfuerzo que ha tenido que hacer para llegar hasta este rincón de Castilla y León y callar y darle la palabra.
Buenos días. So, sorry, I cannot speak Spanish, so let me speak in English, okay? So today I talk about Dureocosmos in Japan. So I'll tell you the success story of the classical biological control of the Torimus sinensis. So first, briefly, the kind of the various kind of chestnut trees. So in Japan, so we mainly breeding the Castanea crinata, unlike in the Castanea sativa. And in China, Castanea morissima. This Castanea is very closely related, so easily make a hybrid. And in Japan, there are many various kind of cultivars. But three main cultivars named Tsukuba and Tanzawa and Ginyose, the three main cultivars. But this data was not so new, so now it's a bit different. So anyway, so in Japan, so most of the cultivars is Castanea crenata, not the Castanea sativa. And Castanea sativa and Castanea morissima, so Chinese chestnut and European chestnut, can grow in Japan, but it's very difficult to get good fruit production. So now we only planted in the Castanea crinata in Japan. And so today, so we'll introduce the pest, Dureocosmos cryphilus, and its natural enemy, Torimus sinensis. And if you are happy enough, you haven't seen this kind of the pest, okay? But I'm very afraid that you'll be able to see in a few years because they expand its distribution. So I'd like to introduce briefly their life histories. So outer circle is the life history of the Dureocosmos, Dureocosmos cryphilus. And the inner circle is the life cycle of the Torimus sinensis, the natural enemy of the Dureocosmos cryphilus. So by the way, the scientific name, species name of cryphilus, cri means the Japanese word of the chestnut. We say chestnut is cri. So Dureocosmos cryphilus is very familiar for us Japanese because the Dureocosmos was firstly described in Japan. That's why the species name is used in the Japanese word kuri. And both species is univoltine. Univoltine means only one generation a year. And in so from the pest status species, Doryocosmos so emerges in early summer. And Doryocosmos only the females, no males. And males so immediately oviposit her eggs in the dormant bud, which is spread in the next spring. So after summer to autumn to winter and early spring, the appearance of the dormant bud is not distinguished from the undamaged one. And in spring, so this oviposited bud is also grow very quickly and into the galls. And then Trimus chinensis. Trimus chinensis is so emerged in the early spring. And they searched for the small galls and to oviposit their eggs inside the gall. And inside the galls, the larvae, hatched larvae, so eat the Doryocosmos larvae, and inside the galls, they replace from the Doryocosmos to Trimus. And after that, the galls withered, but inside, the full-grown larvae still remain inside the galls. And the early spring, they emerged from the withered galls. That's the life history of the both species. So then today, so I'd like to introduce, so only in Japanese case. And the, after that, so we'll introduce Trimus chinensis to Italy, but that topics will so that means year. 0 means 1982. And y-axis means the maximum distance detected, maximum distance detected of the Trimus chinensis. So then, first several years, the maximum distance is fits well with this equation. So the absolute distance was not so big, but this equation means that the dispersion speed is exponentially, so year by year. And after that, after 7 years of the release, these points is very fit well with this simple equation. So this equation means that please note that this number 60 means that even one generation, so the Trimus chinensis could disperse more than 50 or 60 kilometers in the only one female. Okay. So then we so concluded that we've succeeded. So usually, so we would like to say, so it's a happy end, né? That's the end of the story. But in Japan, there is a very closely related native parasite, Trimus beneficus. It looks almost the same, only differs in the length of the ovipositor cease.
This is a comparison of the Torimus beneficus, native one, and Torimus beneficus, Torimus sinensis introduced from China. And Torimus beneficus is very closely related to Torimus sinensis. And that in Torimus beneficus, at least two strains, or ecotypes in Tsukuba, differing in the time of emergence. So the early season strain, TBE in short, and the late emergent season strain, so TBL. Only differing in regard to the time of adult emergence. So the first emerges Torimus beneficus, followed by Torimus sinensis, and then Torimus beneficus, late TBL, late season strain. And as for the morphological characters, on females, we defined OT ratio. OT means, ratio means ratio of the legs of ovipositor, here, O. Ovipositor cis to the length of thorax, T. So, in this index, so that sinensis is the biggest, or bigger than the Torimus beneficus. And among the Torimus beneficus, slightly longer in Torimus beneficus early type than the Torimus beneficus. This is very slight. But males, simply because males has no ovipositor cis, so no clear morphological difference. It's very difficult to distinguish two species. And then let's think about the synchronization with Dryocosmos. So in three terms. So one is adult emergence, time of adult emergence, and second is the goal size, and the third is the ovipositor length. So first, the goal size. So you know that the goal grow very rapidly in spring, and timing of the attack is very restricted in the proper size, because so the Torimus sinensis so emerged this proper size, and that they have the longer ovipositor. But the early season type of the Torimus beneficus and the late season type Torimus beneficus, both the early season is too early, and late season type is so too late, and that they don't have the longer ovipositor cis. So that's why the Torimus sinensis is most synchronized well with the life history of the chestnut gall wasp. And that when we checking the how many eggs do they oviposit, then it's clear that the Torimus sinensis oviposit much bigger number of the Torimus beneficus. And that inside the galls, Torimus sinensis oviposit their eggs, the body surface of the larvae of the chestnut gall wasp. On the contrary, Torimus beneficus usually oviposit eggs in the inner wall of the cell. So if the two kinds of the eggs hatch at the same time, then if they compete, each other, then most of the cases, so we guess that Torimus sinensis win. Okay. And the next topic is so impacts of Torimus sinensis. So this is a blue line and a red line graph is I already shown you before. And the green line is the number of beneficiaries. So after release of Torimus sinensis in 1982, I don't know the reason, but at that time, so Torimus beneficiaries also increased their number. But at the Torimus sinensis, the number of Torimus sinensis is increased, then the number of the Torimus beneficiaries decreased. And after 10 years, so in Tsukuba, Torimus beneficiaries was completely replaced by the Torimus sinensis. So in that cases, so we would like to say that the Torimus sinensis has a big impact on Torimus beneficiaries. But up to now, so as far as we know, Torimus sinensis only attacks goals of Dryocosmos, probably due to its very high host specificity. So I believe that Torimus sinensis has no bad effect on other non-target organisms, making the gold of the Quercus or some other kind of the trees. This is, for example, in Japan. This is so undescribed species of Torimus species, Torimus sp. This species attacking galls of Celticesis japonica. Attacking this gall. But it so shows no ovipositing behavior on those of Torimus, those of Dryocosmos. Although there is a little morphological and behavioral difference between Torimus sp and Torimus sinensis. When I found this species for the first time, so I thought that this must be the Torimus sinensis. So, and the Torimus sinensis, so attacking the other kind of the goals. So it's big finding. But I just consulted with the taxonomist, and the taxonomist denied so instantly this is another species. But the appearance is quite the same. Okay. So then next topic is so taxonomic problems between Torimus sinensis and Torimus beneficiaries. So as you can see, they look very closely. Only the difference is the length of the ovipositor seeds. And if we are crossing experimentally between the Torimus sinensis and Torimus beneficiaries, and we could get the F1 hybrid, and morphological character of the hybrid is the intermediate one of the Torimus sinensis and Torimus beneficiaries. And in the late of the 1990s, DNA analysis was not developed. And so at that time, so we have to use the enzyme analysis. And so in the 1990s, so we can discriminate Trimus sinensis and early season type of Trimus beneficus and its hybrid. But we couldn't distinguish between Trimus sinensis and Trimus beneficus late season strains or its hybrids. So then, probably this is the final topics, and I'd like to introduce what happened now in Japan. So the very strange enough, after introduction of Trimus sinensis from mainland of China, in Japan, a native Trimus sinensis was found. So in here in, we released in 1982 in Tsukuba, Ibaraki Prefecture. But in this, some island or in near Hiroshima, we found the native Trimus sinensis. So native means, so taxonomist, so couldn't discriminate native, these individuals and the Chinese one. That we say the native Trimus sinensis. And that in Korea, in Korean Peninsula, Trimus coreanus was there. And that in Korea also native Trimus sinensis has been found. And coreanus and sinensis can be distinguished morphologically. This is the shape of the antennae. But Korean Trimus sinensis differs only the time of adult emergence as compared with the original Trimus sinensis. And then much more complicated is that one of my colleagues, Dr. Kaori Yara, published the paper entitled this relationship between the introduced and the ingenious parasitoids, Trimus sinensis and Trimus beneficus, as inferred from mitochondria DNA CO1 sequences. So, published year is 2004. So, in the after 2000, around 2000, so, we can dealing with the DNA analysis much better than before. So then, Dr. Yara confirmed that according to her analysis, DNA analysis. So there are three strains in Trimus sinensis. Chinese one and Korean one and Japanese one. And that as for the Trimus beneficus, also at least three strains. So early spring strain, so TBE, and late spring season, TBL. And that another one is emerged in autumn, so autumn strain, TBA. And then she analyzed the DNA composition of these strains. And genetic trees, she made genetic trees. This is the result. So I'm not good at the DNA analysis, so just read out this English. So TBL subgroup 3 is genetically more closely related to Trimus sinensis subgroup 1 and 2. More and different species than to Trimus TBE and TBA. This is subgroup, group B. And this means that taxonomic reconsideration, especially TBL, is required. And that in Japan, so unknown Trimus is still there in the group C. And this group C is different from both Trimus sinensis and Trimus beneficus, which is attacking the Trimus Doriocosmus coryphilis in Japan. So this is the contents of the paradox, Pandora's box. But finally, so although we have opened the Pandora's box, so we are now able to distinguish Trimus sinensis, Trimus beneficus, and their hybrids genetically. This is the title of the paper Dr. Yara published in 2009. And still, we found new things in Trimus. So, we also found native Trimus coreanus in Japan. Coreanus means, so they distributed only in Korea, but coreanus also distributed in Japan. That is native Trimus coreanus. And as for Trimus coreanus, unlike the Trimus beneficus, so Trimus coreanus was not affected by the introduction of Trimus sinensis. But up to now, we didn't know the reason why. And then, after establishment of Trimus sinensis at the first releasing point, some changes so observed. First, so nobody eagerly collected chestnuts after the establishment of Trimus sinensis. Because before introduction of Trimus sinensis, chestnut trees so damaged severely, and only few fruits we could get. So in that cases, we always compete to take the small number of the fruits. But after the introduction of the Trimus sinensis, every tree has a lot of so huge number of the chestnut. So on the ground, field of the chestnut. So at that time, so no one so think that the chestnut so in the variable. So they discarded. So that's why that nobody eagerly collected chestnut. And the most important point is that at the National Institute of Fruit Tree Science, there is a chestnut breeding lab. And researchers in that lab has decided to change its objective. The objective means so obtaining the resistance to the chestnut gall wasp. So, before introduction of Torimus sinensis, one of the most important objective of chestnut breeding is to obtain the resistance to the Doryocosmos. So in that case, although there are many promising varieties, but most of them had to be abandoned unless having resistance to the Doryocosmos. But after success of biocontrol, so listen, any varieties so must be selected without having resistance to the Doryocosmos because of the Torimus sinensis. So the objective of the chestnut breeding in Japan so greatly changed by as a result of the success of the biological control of Doryocosmos coryphellus. And then this probably is the final topic. So do you remember that I showed the introduction of natural enemies into Japan from 1979 and 81 at the Tsukuba, at the National Institute of Fruit Tree Science. And another one is Kyushu University, Kumamoto. Then, what about in Kyushu? In Kyushu, this is a graph. They also released in 1982 at the Kumamoto prefectures. But although Torimus sinensis has established its population, but the population density of the Doryocosmos coryphellus is still high year by year. But Professor Murakami has continued to his research. So more than 18 years. Then they confirmed that Torimus sinensis released in Kyushu has also succeeded to suppress the Doryocosmos coryphellus. So please note that it took 18 years. So in some cases, so you may have to wait for more than 10 years or so. But waiting is very important to this kind of the biological control. And finally, so what's going on in Tsukuba city? I showed this part of the graph before. But we still continue to research up to now, still continue. And very interestingly, towards the end of the last century, the Doryocosmos coryphellus suddenly outbreak. But after several years, then the density was decreased again. But a few years after, also suddenly increased. And then again decreased. So, we assumed that the population density of Doryocosmos coryphellus might change periodically under the presence of its parasitoid. This graph is so, in some sense, this my research work itself. So I got a job in 1978. And after a few years, I began to research on the Doryocosmos. And then I still observe the population trend of the Doryocosmos and Torimus sinensis. Okay. So It's a kind of the so conclusion. So fortunately enough, so the classical biological control of the chestnut goal was almost completed. We succeeded in Japan, but as I showed before, we found a lot of problems to be solved after the introduction of tolimus stenosis. So for more information, please refer these two publications. And this one, a global serious pest of chestnut trees, Dryocosmos cruciferus. The actual one is here. Today I have three leaflets. So I don't know, but first come, first serve basis. So, yeah, but these two is so PDF version. You can download it on the internet. If you have any questions, so please contact me by email. Email is the best way. Okay, so thank you for your attention.
Muchas gracias. ¿El canal, volumen? Tenéis, aunque vamos pillados de tiempo, vamos a aprovechar para 5 minutitos de preguntas por si alguien tiene ahora, aunque el bloque grande va a ser en al final de las jornadas en la mesa redonda. Entonces, nada, muy poquito para no acumular más retraso. Los artículos de la revista que nos ha traído el señor María, pues procuraremos darle difusión a través de la página castanea.es también de la mesa del castaño del Bierzo, para que se pueda descargar, si nos dan permiso, para digitalizarlo y poderlo descargar desde allí. Dos preguntas. Tenemos allí una y luego Beatriz la otra.
Soy José Miguel Vela, del Instituto Andaluz de Investigación y Formación Agraria de la Junta de Andalucía. Muchas gracias, doctor Morilla, por su exposición tan interesante. Y yo tenía dos curiosidades que plantear. La primera, respecto a la gráfica que se ha publicado en su artículo del año 82 y también la ha expuesto aquí en la presentación, donde después de la suelta de Sinensis se ve que la población de Dryocosmos cae casi hasta cero, y en ese momento en que la población de Dryocosmos es muy baja, la población de Torimus sigue siendo muy alta. O el número de hembra emergida de Torimus es muy alta. Si hay muy poco Dryocosmos, ¿cómo es posible que haya mucho Torimus? Es una de mis preguntas. La otra.
Okay. I'll answer the question. Okay. So I showed a very limited area because within the field of the National Institute of Fruit Tree Sciences.
Excuse me.
Okay, again. And my data was observed in the very limited area. And around the National Institute of Tree Sciences, still many chestnut trees. And then that some places so remained hot area, hot spot of the Dryocosmos. And in that places, so still the Torimus sinensis is there. And that I showed that Torimus sinensis has a great ability of disperse. So even in that case, so in National Institute of Fruit Tree Science, so Torimus sinensis could fly outside of the institute. I'm afraid that I cannot, I couldn't answer your question very well, but it's okay.
The data are not about
the question is why the Torimus sinensis number was so high, no? When the Cosmos population was so low, but the data are not referred as number total number of Torimus sinensis, are referred to 100 goals, no? So how many Torimus will emerge from 100 goals? So he collected a number of goals, and from these goals emerged many Torimus, but the full number of Torimus was not so high because the number of goals was little in that area. So.
Bien, hemos en el eje de ordenadas. In the ordinate axis is the number of males emerged of sinensis. Yes, I understand that in x-axis is the percentage of shoots. Hmm? Okay. No, excuse me. In the e-axis is the percentage of shoots. But if the percentage of shoots is very low, Torimus should be very low also, because generally parasitoids are denso-dependent, I think. It is, for me, it's difficult to think in a very low number of shoots with parasitism, and almost all this parasitism is colonized by sinensis. I don't know. I have a doubt. Do you know? And I have seen this in this graphic in the papers and also in the last graphic of the presentation. Okay, thank you.
Hola, yo soy Beatriz Cuenca de la empresa pública Traxa. Mi cuestión está relacionada, pero me gustaría saber cuál pudo ser la razón de que a finales del siglo pasado, con la población de Torimus sinensis establecida, hubiera tal incremento de Dryocosmus otra vez. ¿Cuál pudo ser la causa de que hubiera un pico incluso mayor que cuando se descubrió por primera vez el parásito?
I think only the hypothesis, but one reason is over-exploitation. So the Torimus sinensis exploit most of the Dryocosmos. And Dryocosmos has a parthenogenesis. If the only one female remain there, then the next year they could get increase their population very rapidly. But on the contrary, the Torimus sinensis is not increased so rapidly. So there's a time lag. So that's why the sudden increase of the 2 or 3 years. But after 2 or 3 years, Torimus sinensis can catch up the increase of the Doria cosmos. Then the population density of the Doria cosmos then might decrease again. Probably the magnitude of the fluctuation may decrease year by year. And I guess that some equilibrium point, very low density, both of the Torimus sinensis and the Doria cosmos, probably in 20 or 30 years later. But if I stop the observation in the middle of the 1990s, so we could get such a data. That's why we once succeeded, but not the happy end.
Pues muchísimas gracias.